This week on RSPNB Update, it's a quiet week, but nonetheless, we have something for you. We're re-releasing our monthly bit from January, looking back at 20 years of RuneScape history. We'll also tackle a listener question and run through your achievements. This is RSPNB Update, episode 822, recorded Thursday, March 25th, 2021. 20 years of RuneScape history. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Just myself and Tanis here for a wee bit. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane.
This week is a week that is a little bit quieter than normal. We were initially had updates scheduled to be resumed on Monday the 22nd, but the decision was taken after encouragement from the community to suspend updates for 1 week more. And of course, I'm Shane12088, and he is Tanis79. And we actually have something a little bit different for you guys this week. We thought that, you know, rather than just not doing a show this week, because that wouldn't make me feel good if we didn't do a show this week. And, you know, we offer many, many premium offerings for our Patreon subscribers at patreon.com/RSBNB. And one of these is the Monthly Bit, which is a monthly bonus show that talks for about 45 minutes to an hour or so about a specific topic in RuneScape. We've covered everything from redesigning certain skills out there to building new skills to even, I think our very first one when we set the trail on the monthly bits was the evolution of combat 6 years later. So we do all kinds of interesting and fun things with that. So what we're doing this week is we're going to re-air one of our monthly bits that our vast majority of listeners out there wouldn't have heard. And this one's an hour and 20 minutes long, so you're going to get a regular show length out of it. And we're going to be re-airing the monthly bit from this January, 20 years of RuneScape. This is a two-parter, so if you subscribe at patreon.com/RSBNB for as little as a dollar a month, you can gain access to that entire back catalog of monthly bits, including the part two. So, you know, we're going to have some pretty compelling things to say in part one. We're going to deal with the first 10 years, 2001 through 2010. Part two is when it got interesting, because that's when Tanis's RuneScape memory came alive and the game we know today took shape. So you guys are just going to have a listen to that, and we'll be back on the other side of that for some questions and our picks of the week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another monthly bit here at RSBNB Update. We're back for our first episode of 2021, or first monthly bit of 2021. And believe it or not, this monthly bit is the first thing we are producing in 2021. So our Patreon supporters keep us working. We absolutely love the discussions that you have fostered over the last two and a bit years. And without you guys, I think we really wouldn't have got to scratch the surface and reveal where RuneScape has gone. And, you know, we looked at so many different facets throughout all these years. It's been really quite something. So thank you to our Patreon supporters for making this episode possible. Joining us for this monthly bit is Tanis, as he is for most every monthly bit. Welcome back.
Thanks, Shane.
We also have Joe, the Dwarven Yak, who puts together those really, really amazing RuneScape lore history videos. Good to have you with us.
Thanks a lot. Good to be here.
And Alex43, the original and former writer for, oh God, since the beginning, and a RuneScape player since the beginning, going back to 2001.
Hey, guys. Yep. I am old.
Old, old, old. And it wouldn't be, It wouldn't be RSBNB Update without a Beagle Alert, right, Tanis?
Yeah, and I can't flip my mic now, so it, yeah.
We just got to deal with it.
Push to talk.
I tried to grab the the thing.
No, we're good.
Talk doesn't work well on a podcast.
Yeah, but in any case, before we get going, I'll just remind everybody out there that we are actually doing a Patreon survey. We want to know what you Patreon supporters think. We're going to query you guys. We have some questions about our Patreon offerings, things we could offer in the future. That will be, of course, included in the show notes for this episode. Of course, you can find all that and more at patreon.com/rsbnb. So please do fill out that survey. It would mean the world to us if you fill it out. It will help us guide where we take this in 2021. All right, so let's go back in time to 2001. Oh, I remember 2001. Tannis, you remember 2001, don't you?
I do.
2001, of course, was, I think at that point in time, we were probably hovering around the Pentium 4, Pentium 3, 1 gigahertz barrier. Lots of people were still running XP. Actually, XP only came out in 2001. Lots of people were running Windows 98. Yep. Yeah.
Or Windows 95, depending on how crazy you were.
Yeah, exactly. The internet wasn't nearly as ubiquitous as it was today, and as a result, you know, many games that were out and about were Flash games that you could just play in your browser, and, you know, they were 15-minute stands, and away you go with that. And it was very rare at the time to find a browser game that would hold your attention and let alone be something that you could come back to. And that is what RuneScape was. That is how it gained prominence 20 years ago. And it's an anniversary that few communities, let alone MMORPGs, actually get to. And, you know, because of this, we've gathered our panel here. And I looked for relics. I really did. I wanted people who were playing at least prior to 2005. And I knew the instant person to ask on for this episode was you, Alex, because you started in 2001. But I also wanted your perspective, Joe, because you've been looking at the lore of RS and you've been putting together those videos, and, you know, from a 30,000 feet approach, that must be a really interesting thing to see as well. So what we're going to be doing here is, you know, we have 20 years of history to unpack. So we're not going to do, you know, 3 minutes per year, because that would, you know, be really, really rushed. We're going to extend it out a bit more, and this is going to be our first two-parter monthly bit, where part two will air next month. And with that, we're aiming to do roughly half and half. We'll see where we get to after the hour mark, because some years have way more than others. But I think it's just best to start off in 2001, you know. This was the RuneScape Classic era. It was played in a little Java applet that was 640 by 480 or less. There were no sounds. Everything was 2D sprite-based. And, you know, my memories of RuneScape Classic are ones that, thinking about it, it's something that was very primitive back in the day. And I honestly don't know how I started playing it. I started at some point in 2004, seriously, but I created my account in 2002. Some of the updates that came out in 2001 were Falador, Edgeville, the Champions Guild, we got the Dragon Slayer quest, the Wilderness came out, and of course this was the year party hats were dropped. But Alex, if you go back to 2001, and this is before I knew you, what would you say was the most important aspect, or what do you remember most from 2001?
Well, aside from the fact that I guess technically all the quests had come out in 2001 because that was the game start. So Dragon Slayer was sort of like, at the time, the kind of pivotal quest.
The Grandmaster quest.
Yeah, it was the Grandmaster quest because it was both the longest quest and it had the toughest enemy that RuneScape had ever seen. And it even introduced the mechanic of using the anti-fire shield to fight it, or else you would pretty well instantly die.
Of course, you're talking about
Elvark. No, it's like a whole new mechanic at the time. Yep, I'm talking about Elvark. Which is kind of funny because if you directly attack, because Elvark, he only uses Dragon Fire if he attacks you, but if you attack him, then he doesn't. So the shield was kind of optional. But he was still a really tough boss.
Yeah.
But what I remember, though, is that 2001, like in the original RuneScape Classic, only one player could talk to an NPC at a time.
Yep.
So when the quest first came out, there was this huge lineup. Like they were organizing a lineup of players to approach Oziak so they can talk to him and get the quest started. And that was like, it took hours to get through that line because it took so long for the NPCs to talk because you're just seeing the text above their head and you would always have to choose the right option.
And I remember the same thing with the bank too. And I bet
that's why there was always so many bankers that like, you don't just see one counter, you see like right. 10 bankers in one bank. And that's because everybody was talking to them. And there's sometimes huge crowds of people just trying to find a banker to talk to at the time.
And that's why you have multiple banks in Falador and Varrock and multiple bankers in those banks. Where if you look at the cities of today, like Prif, you have 4 bankers only.
I'm going to also blow your minds. The bank itself was an update because originally the banks, you could only deposit cash in them. You could only deposit coins. Everything else you had to have in your inventory, you had to drop them. So it was very conservative.
I remember hearing
that
story.
Like go into a new Varrock and try, play. Just play, imagine the whole game, but you're in your new Varrock. Or the alternate dimension Varrock where you cannot bank anything.
Tanis, did you know
ultimate
that?
Ultimate Iron Man.
Pretty much.
Tanis, no, did you know that?
No, this all sounds terrible. I'm glad.
But I mean, at the time, there really wasn't that many items. Like, if you had armor and stuff, that'd be in your inventory. But half the time, you didn't have armor, and the armor that was available was quite easy to get. So, really, money was the only thing that you really cared about. But then, of course, you get stuff like quest items and like different perks and stuff. And because the inventory shared space, the same space as the armor, you were usually conservative for space when you wanted to do stuff like mining or smithing or whatever. So,
inventory shared space with your worn equipment.
Yep, you had to share space with your worn equipment, so quite often people would not wear anything just because it took up the extra space. And then you have to go down to the Dwarven Mines, which had the scorpions, and so usually like if you go down there, you're either wearing armor to fight the scorpions to protect people, or you're not wearing armor and you're hoping to goodness nothing attacks you.
Is this how your initial outfit of the Black Wizard outfit happened?
That was actually during members' time.
Okay.
Like initially, like people were wearing like bronze, iron, and steel and stuff. And the greatest, best armor back then at one point was adamantite. Runite had not been created yet at the time. And so, well, again, more or less, there's not that many dangerous enemies out there. So armor really was more or less optional at the time. But again, as more stronger enemies like lesser demons and stuff came out, then people would prioritize getting the armor for the sake of fighting them. But right. Then at the same time, when adamantite came out, so too did the banks. So you really didn't have to worry.
And, you know, I think anybody who makes an account today sees things like the Dragon Slayer and the Champion's Guild as a rite of passage. And for those of us who are maxed,
back then, the Champion's Guild was basically the max guild. Like,
right.
If you were in the Champion's Guild, you were prestige. Like, people always wanted to be your friend.
Yeah, and we just walk by it and away we go today. We don't view these as accomplishments today in 2021. But they were the be all and end all in 2001, and you know it just shows how perspectives change over time in an MMO. So
especially when newer and more when new equipment and stuff comes out, and the sort of like the bar for the high standards keeps on increasing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like nowadays, you're only prestige if you have like a Zaro's God Sword in both hands. So back absolutely. Then, if you wore an anime type plate body, you were a king.
And, you know, we also have, of course, the source of rares, the pumpkins and the party hats that came out in 2001, worth billions. Yep. Today, dropped
I personally
on the
wasn't there,
holidays.
But I'm pretty sure that the mods themselves traded those to the players.
Okay.
Like they
in
would
terms
have, like,
of
they
crackers,
gathered in
right?
The Falador, they gathered in the Falador Park, and there's, like, this huge crowd, and they just basically were trading players over and over and just handing them out.
Right. Okay. Fair
so
enough.
That's how those originally stemmed.
I have a question about Dragon Slayer. When it was released in 2001, so it was there when all this was going on. But what wasn't Oziak the NPC wearing the rune plate body, or did he have an adamant plate body on then?
No, he had the runite plate because the Dragon Slayer was how you got the runite plate. Because runite itself came out before Dragon Slayer.
Oh right, okay. Oh, I'm thinking like it all came out together. But
no,
of course,
no,
it was all
like before Dragon Slayer and the runite plate, the adamantite plate was like the best armor to wear, and so again, you were a king there. But then they released runite, which actually came from a player suggestion in the forums that was so popular that RuneScape incorporated it. Originally, it was supposed to be magenta colored, but I guess they chose blue to be a little more gender neutral.
Yeah, and magenta's kind of hard on the eyes when you think about it as well.
It is.
So.
But they wanted a nice bright color because one of the popular scams that was going on is that people were trading adamantite and swapping it out with iron. And because the color scheme was very similar, quite often people would get screwed over. I myself got screwed over once when I tried to buy an adamantite battle axe from somebody and got an iron one instead.
Fascinating. Fascinating. And
Runite, I mean, there's no doubt you see Runite, you know what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, we also need to underscore at the time that you needed 99 smithing to make the rune plate body if you didn't buy it from Oziak.
But that was if you could find Runite ore, and I don't think Runite ore even existed back then. That was
I think
only
the only place you could get it was in the wilderness, right?
I don't even think the wilderness. I don't think Runite ore was... Well, not at the time, no. I think Runite Ore was an update after Dragon Metal became more popular in the year after.
All right. Well, let's move on to 2002 then, since you mentioned the members' word. Alex, apparently Runite came out in August 13th, 2001.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It was a store in the Champions Guild, just a guy saying, want to buy my toys? And then you go, oh, goody, goody. And then he sold Runite, and people looked at the prices, and again, adamantite plate body was prestige. You see Runite, like Runite sword for 23,000. You're like, how the heck am I supposed to get that?
Yeah, and also according to the wiki, it did come in the wilderness in 2001 as well. So,
oh, it did?
Okay. Yeah,
I didn't know that then.
But
I was level 9.
2002 is also known for members, and you know, I always remember this day, and I wasn't there, but apparently I created my account before. Members was launched because the 15-year event was calibrated to the 15-year launch of Members. And if you created your account on or before February 27, 2002, you would get that 15-year cape in 2017 at the end of February. So for all of us who created our accounts in 2002, February or prior, we got that right away. In February 2017. And the story behind this is that on February 27, 2002, which also happens to be my birthday, is when the member system launched.
Wait. When?
February 27, 2002.
Oh, 27th, February 27th. I thought you said February 7th. I was like, oh.
This was what? The first time that Jagex Ltd. at the time was going to actually make money off of the game, because originally it was just sort of like a pet project, but because of the increase in popularity.
Right, with ads on the sidebar and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, this they went into this in the 15-year documentary as well. Andrew, at this point, was looking for a way to make money and, you know, effectively needed to monetize the game because it was growing. It was just growing so fast.
And he couldn't spend enough time on it. Like, he had to keep up a different job and stuff. So if we wanted to keep RuneScape growing at the rate it was, he would have to start earning something from it.
And it was very successful.
That part of the documentary was really cool to me, because he was talking about, you know, it grew so fast, they were employing people and like, okay, go and set up your desk, build your computer, it's over there, you know, set everything up. And they were just bringing people in, like, you know, they had to really keep up.
I think it was Mod Mark who was one of the people who had to build his own desk.
Yeah, heard that story.
Sounds about right.
But also in 2002, this is the year that things really started to kick into high gear, and it really looked as though that this game was going to stick around. We also got the Heroes Guild and Dragon Weapons, the Plague City and Biohazard Quest, the King Black...
Well, Ardoin in general.
Right. Okay, fair enough, Ardoin. I forgot about that point. I thought that was all there in the initial members world, but I remember they added parts to it after that. The King Black Dragon and the Dragon Medium Helmet, which, you know, back in the day was a huge, huge novelty. And then another round of rares that year in the Easter Egg Halloween Mask Set and Santa Hats.
Yep, and those became worldwide drops because, again, there's so many people online that they could no longer just log on
they
and trade everyone.
Trade
so
them,
what right. they did was just basically just spawn them all at random just everywhere on the world. You could just grab as many as you wanted.
And, you know, I honestly think I remember playing Classic in this era. I really do think I remember playing Classic in this era, but it was so on and off. And, you know, there was one thing that really put me off. There were two things that put me off the game that I can remember when I was first trying it. You know what they were?
The difficulty in being able to teleport everywhere because law runes were super scarce because runecrafting wasn't invented.
Number one was getting around, and number two,
you can't even run RuneScape Classic and again, there was no rune crafting, so law runes were purely by drops, and I think skeletons were one of the lowest levels you can get them from.
Yeah, but you're right. Number one was getting around, and number two was, you know, I just really didn't like the way the graphics looked at the time. I thought they were, you know, really cartoonish, and I couldn't see myself playing it, and I don't know what it was that got me onto it. Maybe we'll get more into that as we head into 2003. But my memories from 2002 are that, you know, we're here, and this is something that is really going to stick around now. We're starting to get serious here, and oh boy, we're actually starting to, you know, weave some story threads here. And some of these story threads, you know, took 12 years to resolve, namely the Plague City series. But nonetheless, anything you want to say else on 2002, Alex, Joe, Tanis?
I wasn't here.
Yeah. They were like, well, it wasn't just the areas and stuff, it was also the new skills. They released four new skills along with the members area, which I believe were thieving,
agility,
herb lore, fishing, and what was the last one again? But it was, yeah, like there was this, that was sort of the selling point behind members, is that there's just so much more to do, and
yeah, I'm trying to remember where
gave
all
people a reason to try
in.
It out, and because there's another half of a world to go through, and
right,
new quests were coming out, and from there, like, all the updates were all on the members side, and so I was a sort of a late bloomer onto the members world, mainly because I didn't have means to pay for it at that time. So oftentimes I was looking at the news and I saw, oh, members got this. I'm like, okay, it doesn't affect me because I'm still free to play.
Yeah. So
eventually, though, I did get members as a birthday present, and then
nice,
suddenly the game just exploded around me. It was beautiful.
2002 skills you were wondering about. We had agility in December 2002, thieving in April 2002, fletching in March 2002, herb lore launched with members. So it was the initial four member skills that launched that year, mm-hmm, plus the placeholder of carpentry.
Also, this is also kind of funny, but the you know, the Watchtower quest, that was the sole reason they created the entire city of Yanile and Gutanoth.
I believe it. I remember doing
that one
quest.
They created the entire area for one quest.
Could you imagine doing that today? Right, but why? Yeah, I mean, you can't imagine doing that today. That would be something that would be unheard of from that regard.
I mean, you could argue that Orthanc has been massively expanded just because of lore or questy reasons.
Sure, Anachronia.
But archaeology as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, and you know, once again, that started as, hey, let's just create an area with some dinosaurs. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd just like to take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters for making this possible, because without you guys, this wouldn't be happening. And you can thank these wonderful people right here for making episodes like this possible. This week, I'd like to thank Andrew C., Brock H., Cameron, Christian S., Cook Me Plox, Danny C., Diana, Duramax, Jade, Gizmo, Gabrielle, Jason S., Keski, Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Nora, Parnassius, Rastafa, Ricky A, Soupfinder, Stabiv, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, all of you, for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And if you're wondering what this is all about, just check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. There, for as little as a dollar a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, including the one you're about to listen to and its part two companion, and a very special one that we have arriving next week for you guys. That will be the April monthly bit. Normally we pull those, but as it is springtime and new things are afoot, and you know, there's lots of interesting things happening in the world, we have decided that we have this monthly bit teed up. And normally we pull, but this is one we definitely want to get out of the way on this front. So look forward to that next Thursday, everybody. But of course, also, we do have a $3 a month tier where you can get a special VIP rank on Discord and mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month. In addition to that, you'll also get stereo AAC versions of the podcast. For $5 a month, you can also subscribe for what we call our insider tier. You get a shout out each and every week, and you gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use for the clip show at the end of the year. And of course, with this, we have our monthly bit. We have our round table that's happening this weekend. But should we ultimately reach our $500 per month tier, Tannis and I, and maybe some other victims, will subject our taste buds to a wide range of spices in the Hot Ones challenge. And, you know, this is a long shot. This one really is. And, you know, if we ever did reach that amount, we would owe it to you guys. And this is the way we're going to pay it back. I don't know if that's payback.
Pay it back. It's payback, all right. One way or another. It is payback.
Ay, ay, ay. I tried to get Sirion and Earthen on this one, but those two are absolutely no spice whatsoever.
Man, we should get Bruin on this one. He puts a ghost pepper hot sauce, just, I mean, for flavor, for fun.
Oh.
Yeah.
And people think I'm crazy for putting jalapenos in my hamburgers.
Yeah.
But that's just a peek of what's available. And of course, all of this and more at patreon.com/rsbnb. So hopefully this little preview here will be enough to whet your guys' appetite, and maybe you'll want to see part two and more monthly bits. All right, 2003. Of course, with this, we had in 2003 the Underground Pass quest, the Legends quest, the RuneScape 2 beta, and another round of rare drops, the Bunny Ears and Scythe. These were the first untradeable rares.
Yep, because they discovered that basically the Halloween masks the party has and the Santa has, they were increasing so high in price that they became sort of these prestige items, and Jagex didn't want to screw over the economy because now if these items spawn, people are just going to be hoarding them as much as possible, so they made them untradeable to kind of mitigate that.
And you know, one thing I feel looking back on this, I feel as though the 2002 to 2003 area was a bit of a golden age for RuneScape, in terms of its RuneScape Classic development. Would you agree, Alex?
Sorry, how so?
Golden Age?
I don't know if I'd call it that. Like the Legends quest was sort of like the last quest that ever came out in RuneScape Classic, and so it was sort of like the pivotal moment of that. And then when the beta came out, then it almost became like a sort of new beginning, I think.
Okay. All right. And I think this is what I was getting at as to what really pushed me over and, you know, made me have a second look at the game was the RuneScape 2 beta. Because I actually remember playing this. And for me, the things that I really enjoyed about the RuneScape 2 beta were that it actually looked better. You could actually run. And it actually had a bigger screen size than the RuneScape Classic screen. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean... And I swear I either dreamt this or this was a feature that was removed from the beta, but was the RuneScape 2 beta ever resizable?
I don't think it was.
Okay. Perhaps I just imagined that then.
Yeah, I don't think resizability came until like when they kind of removed the HUD and stuff.
Yeah. And if you look back at the history for 2003 was a very quiet year because everything that was going on behind the scenes was being tailored towards the rewrite and pivoting towards RuneScape 2.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look at updates that came out, you know, we had Quest, we had the Observatory Quest, we had the Dig Site Quest, which, I mean, who knew what that would blossom into, right? Archaeology of all things. As an address,
after several years.
Sentistant, yeah, after several years, of course. But, you know, 2003 was a bit of a quiet year. And I think the biggest one, and this is one of those, you know, effectively break the glass, break the wall kind of years. And this is where my story truly begins. I know it's where Joe's story begins. And Tannis, your story doesn't begin for a few more years, but my story began.
Yep.
In 2004 with the launch of RuneScape 2. And I played free-to-play for about 2 months or so. I remember RuneScape 2 actually launching. And it wasn't until the tail end of June that year that I got membership. And if you go to the official forums and you look at a post that I made, you'll see that I have maintained membership since June 2004. and it hasn't launched since.
You have the same account?
Yeah, same account since the beginning.
Nice.
And
I wish I could say the
same with me.
And it's the only, and you know, I've had other accounts for little experiments along the way, but you know, namely, of course, that little farming experiment to show how broken the player-owned farm was. But beyond that, this has been my one and only account, and I've been along ever since 2004. And one of the things I remember from 2004 was just the deluge of content updates that came to RuneScape 2 after it launched. Of course, we had RuneCrafting with the launch of the game itself, with the Rune Mysteries quest, because before then you couldn't make your own runes. And like you said, Alex, every rune that you got had to be gotten from a drop.
That's right. And magic at the time was also more of a supplemental thing, because you could use magic while you were fighting something, because melee was sort of the main skill. You couldn't range while you're fighting because the bow was itself its own weapon.
Yeah, well, it wasn't an
actual... But mage was kind of universal in that you could range somebody and you could use it while fighting, so it was a very supplementary skill.
So
go ahead.
I was going to say, were there negative bonuses if you wore armor for magic back then, if you know what I mean?
There was not, no. It was, again, supplementary skill, so it didn't really affect what kind of magic happened. It was only when RuneScape 2 came out that they actually created sort of the combat triangle, and then that's when they kind of started creating armors that affected different kinds of attacks. Like, you'd have to wear the mage robes to better be able to cast magic spells.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Also, in 2004, we got an update that everybody still loves playing to this date, Treasure Trails.
Was that really 2004?
Yep.
I could have sworn it was later.
Nope, Clue Scrolls were 2004.
Dang.
2004. And, you know, with this, there's actually, it was May 2004, and there's actually, and I always love pulling this post up. It was a RuneScape Future updates post from 2004 that talked about things that they wanted to do in the future. And at the time, you know, we kept this running list because it seemed like that, you know, we would never be able to complete all of the updates that they had listed here in 2004. But lo and behold, finally, come 2020, we were able to complete that in 2004. I'm just trying to pull that post up right now. But also in 2004... was the Priest in Peril quest, which opened up the Mauritania Swamplands, which was one of the very first expansions to the RuneScape world as it was at the time. And, you know, of course, the Myrek quests and so on and so forth with that.
Like, if we're not counting Falador, Arduin, and the whole members area.
Yeah, so. But I'm talking post-RuneScape 2, right?
Yeah, right.
So, there was that. And looking at this post, I have it up here. This post was made on March 31st, 2004, which was shortly after RS2 first launched. And I remember using this post as a tracking post early on in the days. What they had promised in 2004, and you guys tick these off in your heads about what exactly they came to be. They promised a Viking-style area, including a new quest in town. Mm-hmm. A frozen lands area, including penguins, mammoths, polar bears, and more. A pyramid quest in the desert full of traps, treasures, and mummies. A barrows area of the undead to find new equipment. I think barrows was 2005. Yeah, we'll get to that. Good training areas designed for rangers. We weren't exactly sure what those were. New quests, including part 4 of the Plague City storyline. New items, including enchantable rings, rare weapons and armor, including weapons with impressive special moves, which, of course, were all the weapons with special attacks. Armored boots, which came from one of the troll quests, I believe.
Yep.
More clothing to help give your characters a unique look. Special prayer book items, which are wielded in the shield spot for prayer bonuses. This, of course, came from the Dagonoth quest.
Yeah, the lighthouse.
Yeah. New features and skill, a treasure hunt minigame, which of course is the treasure trails. Summoning spells, summon skeletons and demons, which came in 2008. The quest journal, random events, pets and followers, foreshadowing Petscape, special organized game events on holidays, many new monsters such as orcs, lizardmen, and more. And it wasn't until Archaeology in Zolo City that we got the lizardmen. And then, of course, Burthorpe Games Room.
Technically.
Player-owned houses, clan support, and a multiplayer castle arena for massive team-based wars. But here's the biggest one. Here's the biggest one. A randomly generated scenario where a new adventure is generated for you and your friends each time you go on it. Form an adventuring party and go on your own personal quest. You know what they're talking about there, right?
That's dungeoneering, yep.
Dungeoneering.
Whole skill.
So they had 6 years worth of development that was effectively, you know, just drawn out as rough ideas in 2004. And this is effectively what Andrew set out to do, just this document, because many people might not know this, but his last update that he worked on was Dungeoneering.
That's some legacy.
We're not counting the Gower quest.
True, we're not counting the Gower quest. And this was all...
I doubt he had much input, to be honest, on that.
Well,
I don't say that in a bad way.
Him, Paul, and Ian were actually the creative inspiration behind the Gower quest. Everything that happened in that quest, those were their ideas, and it was implemented by the J-Mods of the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought they wouldn't have written it. I thought they were just sort of featured in it.
No, they had huge creative impact in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, how else are you supposed to stroke your ego with a quest that's literally about yourself?
And, of course, Castle Wars also came in December 04, which, I mean, I remember playing that thing weekend after
Everybody
weekend.
Played Castle Wars at the time.
Yeah,
it was the thing to do, even though you only got like tickets and stuff, and it really wasn't that much for rewards. Everyone just loved being able to just mass PvP each other.
How do we reinvigorate that in 2021?
I have no idea. I mean, Clan Wars is a thing now, and so it's like you got all these options to fight groups of players, but at the time, like, we've been doing this for a while now, and so really there's not much appeal to it anymore.
I think what they should do is make the 4,000-hour rewards a requirement for an arbitrary cape.
Yeah. But you see, back then, the only other way to fight players was in the wilderness, and so when Castle Wars came out, it provided a safe venue for everyone to just go have at each other. And it was like the only safe way to do that, so that's what made it so popular.
I have lots of good memories going 2004 and onwards. It's really something going back on this, and this is when we were, you know, just starting up the website in 2004. We'll get to podcast territory in 2005, but this is where I hit my stride. Tanis, what would you do to Castle Wars?
What I do? Oh, I messed up people's.
No. What would you do to revitalize it today?
See, here's the thing. Like, do you need to revitalize Castle Wars, or does it just need to be like reimagined? The things that are nice is, you know, you do have the teams. It is the safe PvP. I think that is, if there is a future for PvP, that is the future of it. But would that look like Castle Wars? I really doubt it. I think it looks more like a Soul Wars situation.
And that's,
I think what I would do is I would introduce a whole bunch of bots and stuff to kind of populate both teams and just have them warring at each other to make the place seem a lot more crazy. And
That has the added benefit of people like me who, you know, might suck at combat. We're not going to get our lunch handed taken like every single time. Like once in a while, we'll accidentally hit an NPC and kill him. You know, hey, that's cool. It makes you feel good about yourself.
You know what I think would be really neat, and this is me just going off the deep end on this, is what if you had a Castle Wars kind of thing where one of the bots that you were just talking about spawned with the characteristics of one of our favorite boss NPCs. Say you had an NPC that was actually Telos in disguise and hit like that.
You're such a
that would be funny.
Like, no. Or that's the people like Pain, right? Like,
yeah.
How about like a randomly generated map where you have to sort of blade a dive and surge through it with the flag. So you can't like get a meta way to go through it. Everyone has to find the way and maybe have a non-combat version of it. So you grab the flag and race to the end. People have to stop you somehow, putting gates down or something.
Maybe even like a, you could do like a base system like they do in some FPS, you know, some shooters.
I think we just found I think we just found another monthly bit here, redesigning Castle Wars and PvP.
I think so.
But anyways,
first off the grass, get rid of it, concrete all the way.
Hello. But let's talk about 2005 right now. This is a year that I always remember, for RuneScape, because this one had so many updates that really built the bedrock of what we had for the next 10 years or so. Of course, I mentioned Barrows. That was something we had that was arriving. And Barrows, of course, still forms a major linchpin of the Tier 70 gear that everybody always uses. And even for us relics here, Tanis in particular, it was so hard to part with our Barrows gear when we got upgraded to Tier 80 and the like.
It was hard to part with your Barrows gear when...
Because Barrows introduced us to set bonuses.
Yeah.
If you wear the full set of armor, then something good would happen. And back then, Darox and Guthans were the way to go.
There's nothing like doing Slayer with the Guthans set.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Guthans basically just kept you alive. Like, you were... It was soul split. That's the only way to do soul split back then.
It was like you could grind combat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it was... Especially when you could... Like, you didn't even have Soul Split all that out yet, did you? Like, it was...
No.
It was the only way to do it.
Yeah. But speaking of Slayer, that's when Slayer came out, January 2005.
Yep.
Alex,
of course, came out with the Slayer Tower and the Fremenic Slayer Caves and stuff, and just introduced a whole bunch of brand new monsters, many of whom had a certain way to kill them, which... Again, like how Elvarg was originally interesting in that you needed a Dragonfire shield for, these guys kept things fresh.
Alex, do you remember telling me about the Slayer skill?
Not personally, no.
All right, I'll remind you of the story later.
Oh, dear.
But we also had Desert Treasure that year, which, of course, introduced us to Zaros. I had been following Zaros before this, and this is where I claim my Zaros hipster title, that I was one of the first Zaros followers before it became the cool thing to do after Desert Treasure. So,
why, though? What did you know about it?
Well, I basically knew the rumblings from the Dig Site quest, really. And that was it.
That was about it, really.
Yeah. Like, it was something we didn't know... had its name, but it was heavily implied at the time.
That's cool.
Yeah. So this quest combined with Priest in Peril is what got me into questing. And ever since Priest in Peril, I forgot to mention this in the 2004 segment, every quest since Priest in Peril I have done on the week of launch since then.
Nice.
What?
Look at you, Shane.
What? Every quest?
Every quest since the launch of Priest in Peril, I have done on week of launch.
Nerd.
Kudos to you. That is insane.
That is crazy, dude.
I'm trying to remember. I think the Fremenic quest was the last quest I ever had to grind levels for, because since then I just always had a level for it.
Right. And, you know, grinding levels was a thing too, and that's how I played. after Treasure Trails came out in 2004, for example... I got a treasure trail that sent me into the jungle, and I couldn't go into the jungle without the Legends quest, so that became what I trained for.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I miss those days.
A reason to train.
Just fun. Like, but, when RuneScape 2 came out, you transferred your account and all the done quests and stuff, and so the Legends quest was the only quest I had to do then.
Okay. Was it any different in RS2 versus Classic, I wonder?
Very, very different. RuneScape Classic, the boss, Nezakened, he was way harder because of how the combat worked. He drained your prayer. You can't drink prayer potions during combat. You'd have to leave. But if you leave, he vanishes and you have to start all over. So you had to have at him without eating, without prayer, in one go. And of course, he drains your stats and everything.
What's the camera function ever a problem?
In RuneScape Classic?
Yeah.
There was only ever four angles, and you were always seeing it sort of at the diagonal. So there really wasn't that much of a camera problem. There were some like big slopes and stuff, but you could always rotate the camera to a point where you could just see what's behind everything.
Oh, and with woodcutting also. This goes back to 2002. You had to actually click each time you wanted to cut a log.
As well as mine.
I do.
You have to mine coal and stuff. And now imagine this. Like back then, you could see the rocks when they had ore in it, but before that, like in 2001, you didn't know if there was ore in it. You had to inspect it.
That's where the prospect option came from.
Yep.
So they didn't have colors based on whether they were resourced.
No.
You didn't know that. No. You didn't even know if it had ore in it or if it was still responding. And so you just basically had to keep on clicking it and hope that you get something.
Tanis, does it make sense now why I advocate the way I do for updates to RS3?
No. Why on earth would you want it to be more like that? Like, embrace progress, Shane. Embrace. Like,
but, you know, 2000...
Nowadays, we're just spoiled.
2005 was also one of the things that I remember with this podcast. We started episode one of RSBNB Update on June 12th, 2005.
Wow.
And you know what update we first discussed?
Minlia's farming?
The seeds and farming equipment.
Yep.
And a month later, farming came out.
Yep, because initially you were able to kind of collect seeds from different sources and stuff in preparation for farming.
Yeah, from Slayer and, of course, from thieving as well.
Yep. That was to stop the seed prices from exploding the day the skill came out because, of course, everyone wanted to train it.
And you couldn't even know what your herb seeds were back then. And I don't know. I always felt as though this was my skill.
How did you – you couldn't know what herb seeds were.
That's what I was going
to
say.
No, you basically had to pick one herb seed, plant it, wait for it to grow, and then remember what stack you got it from in your bank and keep a legend on a piece of paper saying this was my Guam
stack.
So
you didn't know what the patch was.
No. No. Like
it's just like how herbs originally worked. Yeah. You didn't know what the herb was until you identified it.
All the herb seeds were basically unidentified.
The hours I spent killing men in Edgeville or Chaos Druids to sell my unids.
Yep.
Love it.
And quite often you got a good price from me, like you could sell them for 1,000 each or so.
That was it, yeah. I had a guy.
Yep. But farming was the rune crafting for the herb lore skill because it allowed you to, you know, make those herbs and, you know, it brought a whole new level of produce into the game.
Otherwise you're killing Chaos Druids in the tower next to Arduin.
Yeah. I did that. I also killed druids in the Taverly dungeon as well before farming came out, and farming completely changed that. And that's why at RuneFest 2019 it was such a surprise to me when they announced farming in Herblore to 120.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that poetic, Shane? Like, the show starts with a farming update, but there was no way you could have known that would be your favorite skill and everything. Like,
maybe it was the show that made farming his favorite skill. It's like one of those cause and effect things.
Yeah, that could be. Is it the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
Anyways, you know, I'd love to talk more about farming, but we also got Morning's End Part 1 and Part 2 in 2005.
Those were fun.
And, of course, Morning's End Part 1 was the easy one. Morning's End Part 2 was the hard one, the light puzzle that Mod Mark apparently designed while drunk.
Yep. I believe it. I used, like, I think 200 prayer potions to get through that darn thing.
I didn't know he was a whiskey drinker. I mean, whatever it was, it makes him mean. He shouldn't drink it.
And
I beat that darn quest pretty well on the day it came out, and I wrote a guide for it as well.
I think we might still have your guide on that.
Yeah, but the images are all gone. I checked. I saw it, but the images are all gone.
Too bad.
Where did you put the guides? Tippet or something?
On the RSBNB.
Oh, okay.
Because originally that's where I was doing my guides and stuff. I used to write quest guides.
And
which is ironic because I personally don't use them.
Right, and that's why Clan Quest was such a perfect fit for you. But these two quests advanced the elf storyline, and we started to get a glimpse of what exactly was happening there, Dark Lord, and what might be on the other side and whatnot. And, you know, it was something.
The Morning's End Part 2 was the introduction to the death Death Altar and the Death Rune Crafting, which was pretty big because, again, with ancient spells coming out, the only way to get Blood Runes and Death Runes was to either kill monsters or buy them from NPCs, and those were very limited. So ancient magic was not widely used at the time.
Right, and of course, keep in mind that this is 2005. Runecrafting came out in 2004, and we only since added Law and Death Runes, and it wasn't until 2017 with Menaphos that we actually added Soul Runes.
Yeah, it took forever.
But, you know, these, I think these are two very pinnacle quests that if you want to see what a quest in RS looks like, you can go back to something like this. Compare that with the epics that we have today, of course. But I absolutely love these two quests. Love these two.
They were good quests. Like, I had fun with the puzzle. It was very, very accomplishing once I finally got through it.
Yeah. Okay. Also in 2005, and I think this is probably one of my favorite years, the Christmas update came out. This was the update with the Falador tree and the workshop in Drainer Village. I still maintain that that's one of the best Christmas events they've ever done.
It was a good one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I had to put some marking paint on that one, but oh boy, 2005. That's the year for me. That's the year. Now we're heading, Tanis, what year did you appear?
The end of 8 into 9.
Okay. So at the tail end of this broadcast. we're going to move on to 2006. 2006. I have mixed feelings about this year.
This one was a weird year.
Yeah, it was. Joe, what do you think? 2005 into 2006. You have any thoughts?
I mean, I was so young. Like, I was just killing goblins trying to save up for Mithril. But, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of updates which are... Pest Control is one that came out in 2006.
Okay,
and I still think that's a great minigame, to be honest.
Yeah. It provided another way to train combat aside from Slayer. It was actually once seen as a derogatory thing. People used to run around calling each other pest control products or PC products, which is absolutely absurd. We also had this year a major change made to Rune Essence, bringing in Pure Essence because Rune Essence was botted by bots. Mm-hmm. And this was, you know, the kind of foreshadowing of the troubles that would be ahead, the whack-a-mole existence of RuneScape and bots in this year. And, you know, anybody who had Essence in their bank had it converted to Pure Essence, and Pure Essence became a member's item. And if you were a member under the RuneCrafting level 30, it would be iffy as to whether you get regular Pure Essence. But after 30, if you're a member, you'd always get Pure Essence. And that was how they handled that.
Because RuneCrafting was a free-to-play skill.
Yeah. And you could use standard Essence, not Pure Essence, and there'd be a chance that you wouldn't get the right kind of yield from it, which makes sense and is a decent compromise.
And I believe Rune Essence only worked with elemental runes, like mind runes. And
yes, stuff. Correct. It didn't work with any of the member runes, like natures and above. But
there's a good balance.
But also in 2006, we got some people's favorite skill, construction.
Heck yeah.
You guys remember how they launched construction? Or is this going to be another edition of Shane and Alex Go Storytelling?
Probably. Didn't they plan to have... Like real estate in the game that would be limited? Or was that back in Classic?
That was back in Classic.
Right. I think that... I'm trying to remember how it went, and I believe construction was released almost out of nowhere. Like,
it
nobody
was
saw
out
it
of
coming.
Nowhere. And I'm going to
so
read
that was
a passage.
Like a huge shock, and it's like, everybody, by the way, make construction happen. Go check it out. I'm like, what?
And this was actually a really funny thing, because when we were on with Mod Ward and we were doing our pre-show and whatnot, and I said, you know, you obviously did some reading after you got hired being executive producer. And I said, how far did you go back? And I said, did you read about the launch of construction? And he said he knew the basics of it, but I said, did you know how it was brought in? And he did not. And I quoted to him from this behind-the-scenes article, May 2006. Sentence at the end here. We are also adding some smaller features to the game later this month, such as clockwork toys for your cats, teleportation tablets, making your own cups of tea, and even chairs you can sit down in.
Yep.
So Jagex. I love it.
And then, wham, last update, May 31st, 2006. We log on. Player-owned houses are here.
There was a whole, like, they changed the login screen as well for this one. And they had a whole song and everything.
We spent 18 hours updating our website and signatures for this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might be wrong, but were the... I think I remember a house portal being in Taverly before the skill was released and no one knew what it was. Or is that wrong?
I don't think so. The original house portal was in Remington.
Right.
And then I think they added them new ones afterwards.
So they didn't tease it at all in game.
No.
Nope.
No, which had some potential downsides, right? Because this is also next to what 2012. This is probably the most infamous year in RuneScape.
Yep. Right. You know what you're going for, right?
Yep.
6606. Otherwise known as the Falador Massacre. We gave it some heck in 2016 when they memorialized it 10 years after the fact, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It was a very monumental event in the game.
And for anybody.
Were you there, Alex?
Sorry?
Were you there, or were you like online or.
I was not online at the time. Actually, no, I was online at the time, but fortunately I didn't partake in it because I was busy just training the skill on my own. But I do actually, I think I remember I was actually there at one point. I saw like people running around in Falador. I'm wondering, what the heck is going on here? And then I just left, like I didn't even look into it because I didn't know what was going on. I thought it was just, because Falador Marketplace was usually populated because that's where everybody traded. So
World 2 Falador.
Again, that's why the Falador Massacre was in Falador, because that's where everybody traded.
Oh, okay.
Smart.
And of course, what happened with this is there was a PvP mode toggle on the player-owned houses, and there was a bug that allowed owners, when the owners expelled people from their house and PvP mode was activated, something happened with this one, and everybody who was in that big, huge house party, thousands of people at that point, had PvP on. And hence the Falador Massacre led by Duriel321 happened.
And they called the Falador Massacre because even though the people had PvP set to them, they cannot actually attack other players that didn't have it.
It was only the one player who could attack.
So there was no retaliation.
It was the only one. It was only one player who could attack.
Oopsie.
So it was, and of course, I mean, when you died in the regular world, you lost your stuff and everything. And so people were just going crazy for stuff.
Dying in the banks on the steps of the teller. Yep.
That's and JMods were on there. They're telling everybody quickly bank your stuff so that you don't lose it if this happens.
I love that JMods were there saying that to people. Like
yeah,
they were
on. They were yelling at people. They had like repeated messages being called out and stuff. And
Ash had to go like middle of the night, didn't he, to the office?
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine. Yeah. You know it's bad when the JMods are like, run for
yep. That's all they could do at the time, too. Like, they didn't have the crazy potato thing or anything.
No, it's really bad, guys. Go.
Also, another skill launch. And I think these are the two fastest back-to-back skill launches outside of the formative years. In the classic area. In October that year, we also had the Hunter skill.
That was an interesting one.
Like, yeah.
Again, people weren't really expecting it that much because they didn't know what it would involve. But then as you kind of started doing it, you kind of realized how it would help out. And Hunter's a bit of a sleeper one, in my opinion, because you really didn't get much from it. Like, player in houses, you get your own altar and a whole new way of training prayer and stuff. But Hunter, like, you're just getting, like, more Hunter gear to get better stuff. And then I guess like the big one that you would get at the end of it was catching imps that would bank your items, but that was about it.
Yeah, it was level 71, and that skill was released unfinished, you know, so to speak. There's nothing in 99.
Yeah. And again, there was really no reason to do it because there was nothing you could get that was actually really worthwhile. So
and, I mean,
nobody really trained it that much.
I'm going to say this still today. I don't know what the point of the Hunter skill is.
Well, we have Big Game Hunter now, which is a big point of it. So.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yep. Still, it was a nice distraction from destruction.
Well, I mean, for a minute, Hunter kind of had this. It did have an esteem place in the skilling community because you could just push it to like obscene sweaty levels, right? But you had to really be pushing it. It doesn't have the same oomph nowadays.
It also brought in Chinchampa range training.
And that was sort of the savor of the skill.
Yeah, because it was, I think, the first AoE range training method, because of course we had the ice spells in Magic.
Yep, and now we have the Chinchampas.
And I guess
the cannon.
Yeah, the cannon as well.
Well, yeah, you technically had the cannon, but that was kind of its own thing.
That was years ago. I can't believe you let that year pass without mentioning your cannon, Alex.
Oh, yeah, cannoneers. How did that happen?
Yeah, I was waiting for you guys to talk about it because that was sort of how I made myself popular. I got my cannon back in 2002.
These are your memories. You were supposed to bring that up. The Dwarf Multicannon of 2002.
Or actually, no, 2003. I got mine in 2003 because it was a little later to that, but what happened was I found that there was a fun little thing with the cannon that if you set it up, this is back in RuneScape Classic, when you set the cannon, all it did was it triggered something that tells you that you have a cannon set up so that if you set up a cannon, you could pick up anybody's cannon. So, the cannons were like, they didn't really have a set owner to them, and so you're able to pick up anybody's cannon. So quite often what people would do is they would try to scam other people by saying, I'll log off so that people can grab my cannon, because the message that if you tried to pick up the cannon would be that the owner is nearby, you cannot pick it up. And that was misleading because you wouldn't be able to pick it up even if they logged out. So that was a scam that happened. So I became sort of like a Robin Hood character in which I would find those scammers, I would pick up the cannon and just leave. I'm like, got it, thanks. And
nice.
Half the time they would freak out because they didn't know about that. But again, even better, I found out that if I set up the cannons lasted for about like half an hour on screen. I could run back to Nelodion, grab a new cannon with mine already set up, come back, and then set up another cannon. And then I'd be able to kind of pick them up and do whatever with them. And so I ended up doing that with about 8 cannons. I set them all up in the fun formation in front of Falador and hosted what I called cannon parties at the time. Where I would basically just keep on picking up cannons and putting them down and rearranging them in like pictures and pictures and formations and stuff.
Did you ever draw a penis with them?
No, I'm a lot more original than that.
Thank you.
So RuneScape 2 had a slightly different system where you could not pick up your original you cannot pick up anybody's cannon anymore, but the thing where the cannons still kind of stacked still existed. The problem was that cannons now took a 3x3 square, and so I wasn't able to kind of stack them up next to each other. Unless I stacked them directly west or southwest of each other, because it didn't have the barrier there for some reason. So I wasn't able to place a cannon directly next to another one to the right, but I was able to do it to the left or to the bottom of it. And so whenever I did like a pattern or a design, I was doing it basically from the top right down. And what got fun, though, is that because teleports were much easier to obtain because of runecrafting, I was able to get like whole cannon parties of like 20 or so cannons, and I got them all set up in Falador in these weird, intricate patterns. Like at one point, I created a fortress full of cannons, and I created like a starship at one point, and I got like so many pictures on my hard drive, we'll have to dig them out and search for them, but that was sort of the thing that I did with cannons, and after a while, they changed it so that you could only have one cannon set up at one time, and then that was it. Like, no more cannon parties.
Wonderful. This.
But this was years, though. Like, it took a few years for him to fix that, and since then, I was having just too much fun with that.
This diversion of cannons brought to you by Alex43. We're going to move on now to.
That's why I'm a cannoneer. I made so many cannons happen.
We're going to move on to 2007 now, and you know, based on this, we are going to end it after 2010, just based on how we're going time-wise here. And we'll pick it up next month. But 2007 brought us the clan chat system.
Well, brass clans in general, yeah.
Yeah. The God Wars dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
The ZMI.
The first one.
Altar, the first one, correct. The Grand Exchange. And
big update.
And wilderness and free trade removal.
which happened quite a ways before the Grand Exchange, if I recall correctly.
No, the Wilderness and Free Trade removal happened in December. The Grand Exchange actually came out in November.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's definitely.
I could have sworn there was like this big set of hiatus months where people just weren't able to trade with each other for a while.
Oh yeah, you couldn't trade with each other. It was unbalanced trade. That's exactly what it was.
Like it had to be. Like you were forced to do a balanced trade, and I think like if you were friends with somebody for like a year or so, then you had a little
then
bit more leeway.
And you had a bit more.
So that people could like exchange prayer potions or whatever, but that was it. Like you cannot make big giant trades or stuff.
This was Armageddon.
Despite
the God Wars dungeon coming out, despite the clan system, not the official clan system, just Clan Wars, Clan Chat. I think clan system came out in, what year did the clan system come out? I think that was like 2009 or something to that effect. But this was Armageddon. I mean, 2007 up until then pretty much continued the pace that we had going since 2004, 2005. And I remember covering this on the podcast. And this was something that completely changed the game.
Yeah, as we saw. It was huge. I think they lost almost half their player base almost in that one update. It was a very hardcore decision for them, but I mean, you've got to realize that half their player base was bots, right? So
yeah.
So this had happened before. Everyone had forgotten.
Mm-hmm. But I remember logging in like when that happened, like all the trade restrictions happened, and I'm thinking to myself, it doesn't really affect me very much because I'm more kind of my own guy.
Right.
So I logged on and noticed that the worlds, like, they were only a tenth of their usual population.
And this is exactly the messaging that we took on the podcast, is that if you play within your friends, if you play within your community, this isn't going to affect you as much. And in fact, it's going to make it easier for you to find items with the Grand Exchange. Tanis, what did you say this was foreshadowing?
Well, another time when we lost about half the community.
Yeah. And I
didn't realize that happened before.
Sorry. Yeah. And
funny story, I was able to adjust to this quite easily because the year before, in 2006, I had been permamuted because, again, I told you guys I used to write guides, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there was a player, he's asking me for the guide, and I was trying to direct him to that website, to RSB&B, because he somehow got onto some weird bot site, and then he reported me because I was advertising real world websites and I got permamuted.
Oh, nice.
So I wasn't able to talk to anybody, and this was before Quick Chat, so
yeah,
I literally couldn't
that.
Talk to anybody. So
the things we got.
When did you get that? Did you get it reverted?
I did, yeah. A year later. I kept on bugging Jagex about it. I told them to check the evidence again because they actually had the evidence on there. And you can clearly see I was trying to redirect the player to a proper website. I said, they shouldn't do that. It should never ask you for a password. Go to this website instead.
Yeah, people used to get
And a few times, like, I had JBot saying, don't contact us again or else we'll actually ban your character. And then I waited for a couple months, and then I tried again, just kept on poking them. And then eventually I got the one friendly Jagex bot who said, yeah, you know what? You're right. I think you've learned your lesson and stuff. And so they unbanned me.
They used to ban people for mentioning fan sites and clans all the time.
Yep.
Yeah. Really? I mean, they had to be careful back then because most of the playbase were kids, right? So
Yeah,
and a lot of sites were based on stealing your password anyways, and that was a huge problem. So that was part of the thing.
Yeah.
But just being muted at the time, I mean, it kind of helped me pull me through it because I was a loner character at the time anyways, and so that's why the trading never really affected me.
And this time, I remember reporting this stuff on the podcast, and the dread within the community was the highest I'd ever seen it. And the only other times we had got close to this level was after EOC, after the bot epidemic in 2011 or whenever they did, or before they did the bot nuke, and Tanis in 2011 the bot nuke was, and in 2019 with the drought of updates.
Wow, see, and I didn't think 2019 was anywhere near what we had seen.
Right, and now you see why I was going so hard to try and keep things positive that year, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because you've seen it spin out of control a couple times now. The funny thing to me is I'm sitting here thinking, you know, you guys are talking about how the community felt like it was you know, Armageddon and Dread. And when I started playing RuneScape, that this was already a thing, right? So I was here when they had the big debate and vote on bringing it back. And I had the opposite feeling. I'm like, oh, no, we're you know, like, this is so bad. People just going to give things away. You know, and it's just funny how when you start, you have a completely
exactly. And this and this is why the players, when they pushed for the old school vote, said we want something from summer 2007.
I mean, a lot more things make sense now. Yeah, I didn't realize we lost so many players out of that.
And that's why it's called 2007scape, because like I said, they were on a run from 2004 to 2007 that felt pretty good. And in retrospect here, still looks pretty good.
Yeah.
And then we move into 2008. And I'm going to, after 2009, I'm going to say something, and I want to get through 08 and 09 first before they say this. But 2008, January, we had the summoning skill, which is, you know, still the same as it was on launch. Today, it's effectively the pouch-making skill. There's a few useful familiars that people like to use, like the binding contracts, the pack yaks, the knee hills, and so on and so forth.
That was another skill that they released in two parts.
Yeah. Two-parter. It also added on to the combat level, brought combat to 138 from 126.
That blew people's minds.
Yeah.
Because that was like the first time in since RS2 came out that the combat, the max combat level was upgraded.
Did people throw a shit fit and demand to make it more difficult to figure out the math?
No, never. Actually. No. The bigger hissy fit was when with EOC when they converted it to combat level 200.
Well, that's what I said. Yeah, that was we want complicated math. Damn it.
And dual wielding.
But you know, in hindsight, the combat formula isn't complicated.
No, I know, but I was definitely a supporter of those nice round numbers.
Right. The combat formula is 1.3. times the maximum of your attack plus strength, or two times your magic, or two times your range. So the maximum of either of those, plus your defense, plus constitution, half of your prayer rounded down, plus half of your summoning rounded down, all divided by four.
Yeah, see, when we get into formulas, you lose me, man. Like, I'm not, no.
This is really simple.
You enjoy this stuff, but no, I don't want to.
Okay, we need it. We need an impartial party here, Joe. What do you think?
Sorry, about what?
About the combat formula.
Oh, well, I think I was pretty upset when they changed it to 138, and 200 to me was just ridiculous, because I think 124 is just RuneScape.
126.
Sorry, yeah, 126 is just okay. RuneScape. Changing it to a rounded number felt like making it a bit more of a generic game, and I didn't want the game to be generic and accessible. I wanted it to be mine.
Also in 2008, we got RuneScape HD, textures.
And resizable screens.
Resizable windows, full screen.
A beautiful login flyover.
Graphics card-based rendering for the first time. And this is when RuneScape started to look like what we see today. It, of course, kicked up with EOC, but you can still go to various areas, you know, being one of them, and you can see what it would have looked like in 2008. Granted, with a much less draw distance and the like.
Oh, yeah, like they didn't have NXT out until a while later.
16, yeah. Yep. I think this was important. It increased immersion and it, you know, moved us away from that tiny, tiny little screen, so to speak. So
it was a small screen. Like, you were almost playing on 800 by 600.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know, at this point, we were definitely moving on into, you know, some higher resolutions as well. We weren't at 1080p yet, but we were getting there along the way. So this was needed, and, you know, I think, well, we didn't get accessibility stuff for Utanis until 2013 with the movable interface, but still. We also had the birth of polls in 2008 guaranteed content polls. This wasn't player power yet, but it was polls. And with the amount of polls they did in 2008, you can kind of see that they were looking to gauge player sentiment following the Grand Exchange fiasco.
At one point, we lost the forums as well. Like, the forums used to be out in 2001, 2, and 3, and then they disappeared after a while, and then they came back later.
Yeah. What were you going to ask, Tanis?
Oh, if these were the polls that were always on, like, the website, like the quick poll?
No, these weren't the quick poll. You had to log in to access these.
Okay.
But in banks, like poll stations?
No. That wasn't until, like, 2014 or so that you were able to do that.
Yeah.
No, it's on the website, I think.
Yeah, website only.
Yep.
So, I missed that. Yeah, and then 2009 we had Soul Wars, Mobilizing Armies, and Extreme Potions.
And Overloads.
Overloads and the like.
And that basically bumper boosted the Herbler skill, because back then you could only create like weapon poison was the highest level.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to say what I said I was going to say. I feel like 2008 onwards was the beginning of a period of darkness.
Mm-hmm. Because free trade was all gone and stuff. So.
Free trade was gone. And, you know, the updates just weren't as impactful as we had in the 04 to 07 period, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't much for new skills, aside from summoning, but... I mean, that was just another kind of money sink grinding skill, and so the economy went down a little bit because everyone was spending all their money on it. And because free trade wasn't there, it was the Grand Exchange that's kind of supporting everything.
And I see, it's funny because I didn't notice that because there was so much like, even at this point in late 2008, early 2009, like, there was so much content
for you
game.
To play that was in there already.
For me to play, yeah, before I even started paying attention to, you know, updates and stuff like that. It's crazy when you think about it like that.
And, you know, looking back on it, these were, and I mentioned it was a dark period, not only because of the updates, but you guys also have to realize that despite the wilderness and free trade removal, bots still existed and used the Grand Exchange.
They did.
And, you know, the market was in the toilet. All the resources, mining, wood cutting, fishing were... Green dragons in the wilderness. You had to compete with bots. You just had to. And this is why I call this era a period of darkness. And, you know, it continues until the bot nuke in 2011. But in 2010, we had Nomad's Requiem. We also had the next new skill, which was Dungeoneering, April 24th, 2010. Mm-hmm. And Tanis's referendum on wilderness and free trade.
Nice.
Yeah. I just didn't know.
And in hindsight, isn't it good that we went back to that system?
Yes. Well, it's excellent. Like I said, I just didn't know better at that point.
And the Wilderness and Free Trade referendum was a new CEO move by Mod MMG. And as in one of those things, a new CEO comes in, makes some changes in the first 90 days or something, and this was it. The Wilderness and Free Trade referendum. So, but also, bonus XP weekends. This was the start of bonus XP weekends.
Back in the day, that they were Christmas.
They started at 2.7 and worked their way down to 1.1 times over the span of, what was it, 48 hours, I think?
Something like that. It's like every hour that passed, it went down by, I think, 1% or something like that.
I mean, you were done by, like, the afternoon. Yeah. In a lot of cases, you know. Like, I thought I'd have a whole weekend. I remember it being, like, 6 o'clock. I'm like... Oh, man.
No, but just all the training.
Yeah.
And this was, of course, a period where you had to do your highest impact things first, so your farm runs, your construction and whatnot. Oh, and it wasn't...
prices for resources exploded, too,
right.
Because everybody was freaking out if they wanted to buy stuff.
And it wasn't actually 48 hours. It tapered off over 15 hours.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
You could sell Dragon Bones for like 15K on the Grand Exchange.
And you fell down to a 2.0 multiplier at about the 3-hour mark.
Yep. Didn't take long.
Nope, did not take long at all. And, you know, that takes us to the end of 2010. And I feel like we're kind of ending off on a bit of a sour note here with this.
No, well, are we? I mean, because I think we...
It's a cliffhanger.
We didn't give Dungeoneering the love that... well, it doesn't deserve, but I feel bad for it. Kind of like...
Dungeoneering was amazing.
It was a fun distraction because like it didn't matter what you had or anything like that because you went in with nothing and you didn't really get much out of it either. So if anything, it was sort of the distraction from the economy and all the money making and stuff that you would originally be doing.
It's also a fun time capsule today because you can go see how rune crafting and the mining and smithing skill were because they're still the same as they were back then in Dungeoneering.
See, Dungeoneering was like it was in your face about playing by yourself because up until this point, when I first started, you know, first year or two, I pretty much played. Like Alex is talking about, just kind of a loner.
Yeah.
But you couldn't really do that in Dungeoneering. If you did, Dungeoneering was like so... I did not like it when it came out. I'm like, this is so hard. And not that it's hard. It's just it was really fun, but it took forever. And I didn't like that.
It's definitely daunting by yourself.
Right. But then, you know, with a few years later when, I had several friends, I was in a clan, and I had some of the best times I've had on this game, Dungeoneering. Like, just some of the best times I've ever had. So it's crazy how what a stark contrast how the experience can change just depending on if you're by yourself or not.
Right, and I do think I remember having the feeling back then that okay, we're going to go do Dungeoneering, and I could kind of just put the rest of the game world aside out of everything that's happening. And not worry about it. That's how I felt with Dungeoneering back then.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, because before Dungeoneering came out, we had Barbarian Assault, and that was more or less the same thing. You team up with guys, and Yolo Hall will have your respective roles and stuff.
But it wasn't in an instance. It wasn't cocooned from the rest of the world.
Yeah. I felt like Barbarian Assault was always a bit more toxic than Dungeoneering.
You think so?
Oh, really? Wow.
Though I had a lot more fun. So. I was the defender, and everybody appreciated the defender because nobody wanted to play defender.
Same. I love defending, but it's like you get to wave 8 if you're going with randoms like World 6. You get to wave 8, and some guy dips. It's like, got my torso. See you. Come on. But Dungeoneering was great because it really was an adventure. And back then, it wasn't about efficiency. It was about okay, you go and fish. I'll make a fire at base, you cook the fish, we'll cut the logs, we'll make some bows. It's really fun to do that every time.
And, it's still a skill I'm working on. I'm currently, I think, 112, 113, something like that. I do want to get to 117 one day, for the master quest requirements. But it's just something that's still today, 11 years later, it's a hell of a grind.
It is.
Same. You should have been picking up them dailies, but
EDs, you say?
Yeah. Good experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that you
got
to do.
You got
that
other
in.
Options now.
Yeah, you got to do that in non-safe mode, though. But
the whole of Destiny at Lumbridge Crater.
But I think we're gonna cap. I think we're gonna cap it off here, and we'll be back next month with part two, moving on into 2011 and beyond. A brighter. Yeah, a brighter period on that because, it gets better. And I think it really started to kick off again in – you guys are going to hate me for this.
Go ahead.
It started to kick off in 2013.
Yeah. Why? What's bad?
I'll agree with that one, actually, yeah.
And that's a bit of a preview for where we're
2013
at.
2013 saw some very monumental events and stuff compared to everything else.
World event, big quests, RuneScape 3.
World Wakes, one of the biggest of the time since the Walgothic Sleeps quest, which was really epic.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I wrote about, was going into that as a golden age. I mean, it was for me. I mean, that was the movable interface. That was like,
yeah,
man, RS3 opened this game up for me.
And then after that, I think it's nothing but up, with maybe a few exceptions here and there, but we'll save that for next month. So thank you everybody for joining us for this monthly bit. Look forward to continuing to celebrate the 20th anniversary of RuneScape throughout the year, apparently, according to the most recent postings that have been put out by Jagex. I thought we'd be just dealing with a few month affair, or a few week affair, rather, but we're going to be spreading out 4 quests across the entire year, so it should be a pretty fun one. And, you know, maybe we might have just found our theme for 2021, but we'll be back next month with the next 10 years. So until then, see you next month, everybody. And of course, remember to complete that Patreon survey. It would mean the world to us. See you next month, everyone.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Alrighty, hopefully you guys enjoyed that. And as I mentioned in the open, if you want more of that or you want to see part 2, just subscribe at patreon.com/rsbnb for as little as a dollar a month. And, you know, maybe you'll find other monthly bits that are interesting, like the agility rework, future skills that could come out, and of course part 2 of the 20 years of RuneScape and more. So thank you so much, everyone, for making this episode possible. But we do have a question this week before we get on to our picks of the week. Question from Aaron came in via email. What do you guys think of existing untradeable items as compensation for those who are locked out? Now, even as a main account locked out, XP isn't really worthwhile unless I earn it. Free lamps or stars doesn't feel right. In-game items or even bonds that are worth GP can never be correct. There's no way someone 6 months into the game will hold the same value to items as I do as a max main. One way, though, is untradeable items. For instance, I've missed out on my fair share of holiday items. Keep in mind, I specifically mean untradeable. That maybe I wasn't playing during the holiday, or it was an older item that I missed out on doing it. Being unavailable and only available for a limited time, or being a kid during that time. Now, as a huge bonus, there isn't any dev time as these items exist, and it wouldn't cost Jagex any money like gifting additional bonds or membership. And on the personal side, it would actually leave me pretty happy to receive these holiday items that I missed out on, which my account is old enough to receive. That's interesting.
I was going to say that is a really interesting proposal, but this is untradables, right?
Not yeah, rares, absolutely not untradables.
Like, yeah.
I understand why you're pausing.
Because if we do this, then, I mean, this opens the box, yep. Right? So.
Yeah,
because the only way to really do this would be to like create some kind of a token, like what you would get with Premier Club, where you get those cosmetics.
Yeah.
So it'd have to be something like that. And yeah. If we do it for that, then there's no reason we couldn't do it for something else. That being said, I think that it would be worth the dev time to create some token of this mess for the people that were affected by it. I mean, I know everyone wants to put it behind them, but if we're talking about an untradeable, I would say that would be my preferred way of going.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know there's lots of people out there who are missing items, you know, say the 2005 or 2006 Christmas events, like the scarves and the hats that are associated with those longtime events. Another two that I personally don't have access to are the bunny ears and scythe, the 2003 holiday events that were untradeable the first time they did untradeable holiday items. I don't think they did if I recall, there was no holiday event in 2004, which was really odd. But they came back with vengeance in 2005, and beyond, or no, 2004 was the yo-yo. 2005 was the hats and scarves with marionettes. You know, I honestly don't have a problem giving away these untradeable holiday event items. I really don't. I think that would be a good idea. And this actually, and, you know, you'd have to do this pretty quietly, I have to say, because there was actually a poll that was done in the player power era, power to the players, that passed, that said, should we, you know, devise a way to put these old holiday items in game? The poll passed, but that poll never came to fruition, because whenever they would talk about it, there would be the people around from that time who would have too much of a problem with those items going out.
And you can't keep secrets nowadays.
No, you can't.
There's no way.
You can't. But, you know, that's one thing I like about the old school approach, is that they just made their holiday items available to everyone. The first year old school was out, they redropped the party hats, despite people who were playing might have had them on RS3. There was no question. Party hats for everyone. Now, of course, we're not saying you should redrop the party hat, the Christmas cracker, the Santa hat, the pumpkin, and Halloween mask, blast Santa hat, and everything else that is a tradable rare. I think there would be no problem with doing the untradable ones. I think that would actually be a fun thing to do. I don't know if it should be limited, though, to just people who were locked out of this. I think it should be for everyone, honestly.
So you would be in favor of the kind of, like, bringing these back then?
Yeah.
The token approach?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
See, yeah, and that's what you have to, I mean, that's the rub for me. You either have to be all in or not in.
Right, so you can't just say you're going to have a very specific and limited selection. It's got to be any reward that you missed out on.
Right.
That's untradeable. And see, that's an interesting...
You could put them in the Oddmint store. We do have a place for this.
Yeah,
we
could,
do have
a
currency.
You could put them in the Oddmint store, and that would be another fix for it for everyone. And, you know, maybe they could do the token for people who are locked out and everybody else. They could go in the Oddmint store after a set amount of time. Like, come Halloween this year, put the scythe in the Oddmint store. Come Christmas this year, put the... yo-yo and the hats and the scars in the Oddmint store. And Easter next year, put the bunny ears in the Oddmint store.
No, I would be okay with a trickle like that.
Yeah.
You know, that would be fine. And I think it's repetitive enough. It makes sense. It's kind of a theme to bring one old thing back each holiday.
Yep.
So that wouldn't seem like it was... That wouldn't seem too much to me.
Plus, I mean, it's 20 years, right?
It's 20 years. It's probably a good time to do something like that, especially if we're doing this year-long celebration.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think you changed my mind, Shane.
Would I be going too far to say that... No, I'm not going to say this. No, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that. I was thinking they could take it one step further.
Oh.
On Easter, Halloween, and Christmas this year. But I think you'd have a rebellion on your hands if that happened.
Yeah.
You know what I'm thinking, right?
Like, all of them for those available?
Yeah, yeah. I guess I'll just say it at this point. On all the holiday events this year, redrop the tradable rares.
Yeah.
You'd have a rebellion, wouldn't you?
You know, but it's kind of like power to the people, though, right? I mean...
Because we were just talking about this in the Discord today, that green party hats up to $30 bill.
Yeah.
And I have half of that with my Black Santa hat, apparently. Black Santa hat's worth 15. So
I think, I mean, you could do that. I want to see that at an Easter event with like an egg hunt, but like a real one with like some super hard clues. One of those kind of things that, you know, it exists on all forms of media that the game is on and in the game. You know what I mean? Like it'd be both. And then when you found it, maybe it'd be a rare. Or like,
what about this? They drop the old rares as I was suggesting, but they make it so that they're cosmetic overrides, and they of course have no value associated with them, and you can only wear them around the week of that holiday each year. That would be another compromise on that.
Yeah, but that wouldn't affect the market value.
Exactly. So,
I mean, and most people don't want them just to wear them.
Right.
The whole idea of wearing it is to say, look at me.
I do.
Well, I believe that.
Right. And we've not bridged the issue that I'm, you know, not the normal RuneScape player out there. So.
Yeah. You should have like a green party hat to go with the Master Farmer.
Yep. That was the plan.
That was the plan.
That was the plan ages ago before it took off like a rocket ship.
Yeah, because now I don't think there is anything you could grow to make that kind of money.
No, I'd have to somehow, based on, I guess, what the current market says, I'd somehow need to make about $15
billion through PBM. Oh, $50 billion, that's it?
One five. Oh,
well, do you have half of that?
Yeah.
Go down to the sand casino.
No.
Get it all back.
No. We're not doing that.
You could have it tomorrow.
No.
I mean, you could have it tonight.
No. Anyways, we're getting off the question here, but I like the idea of giving away these old cosmetics. The untradeable items, at the very least. It should have been done years ago when the players voted for it. And, you know, now would be a good time to do it for people who are locked out. Give them a token, a choice of three, and then gradually release them out over the next year or so through the Oddment store. That would be
nice. Yeah, and tie it to the 20 years thing if you're going to do it.
Exactly.
Because that gives you an out, kind of.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not going to happen next week with the Easter event, but, you know, bunny ears would have been the perfect time to start. So.
Yeah. I hope we don't get that just visual clutter that we've got last year. It's not. No bueno for accessibility.
Yeah, I think they heard about that. Yeah. I think we'll be fine. So. Thank you for that question, Aaron. All right, we're going to move on to our picks of the week, but before that, April, time for skill of the month. We're doing a fishing contest this month. It's running for 2 weeks from April 5th through the 19th. Just sign up at rsbnb.com/skotm, or you can find a link.
I'm getting in on that.
Yeah, go for it.
Get in on that one. Mm-hmm.
Find a link to that at update.rsbnb.com. And Parnassius, who took part in the last contest, will be putting up a bond for this one.
Oh.
So there's going to be a bond up for this one. And we have a discussion going on the forums as well about what rewards and winning the skill of the month should look like. So it's something we definitely want to continue. But we're doing only one in April while we consider that. So rsbnb.com/skotm. All right. What is your pick of the week?
Shane, this week I'm going with the musical pick. The weather is starting to get nicer. You're starting to look for those summertime kind of songs. And I definitely think I stumbled across something this weekend. just messing around on YouTube, there's a guy called Nico Moon, and he his new album is called The Campfire Sessions, and it's there's a couple really good songs on there, but the one that's my pick of the week is called Paradise to Me. It's all about, you know, taking it easy, going out on the water, just having a good time, hanging out with your family, your friends, and just, you know, it just feels like that laid back kind of summertime song. So yeah, that's my pick of the week. He looks like he's pretty young. I hadn't really heard of him before or anything. So
neither have I, but I don't hear about that kind of stuff.
Well, every once in a while, your YouTube algorithm will just be like, here, try this. And
he is classed as pop country, 38 years old from Texas.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I could say that, because I have a hard time saying it's country, because I come from an era that it's not exactly country. It's definitely closer to pop, but it's really laid back. It's not, you know, the candy
it's
pop.
It's not that kind of music David had us listen to last year. The worship and prayer stuff, right?
Oh, I mean, I listen to that too, but that is not this. Yeah, this is definitely it's just laid back. This is the campfire stuff. Like I was telling you before, I'm like, it's the best kind of music to sit around and listen to and sit around and play. Is that, you know, some friends around a campfire, and that's what this album is. I think it's a live stream you can find on YouTube as well, but yeah, so that's my pick, Paradise to Me by Nico Moon. Go check it out.
Wonderful. All right. Now, my pick of the week is a little bit more timely. This is one that everybody has become aware of recently. And, you know, normally people are, of course, only aware of the Suez Canal based on something you learn about in school. But this week, everybody's has been following the plight of the ship known as the Ever Given, which has run aground in the Suez Canal. And as such, has filled the internet with memes. It's backing up shipping traffic costing millions of dollars per hour, that everything is delayed. And, you know, they're still trying to get that ship out. And it's going to be a question of, you know, how the hell did that big container ship run aground and get stuck sideways in the canal? That's a question everyone's asking, of course. And, you know, you're probably wondering, okay, well, how many ships are out there that are actually being blocked? Well, there's actually a website out there called vesselfinder.com that will show you all of the ships that are currently out there shipping. It even lists pleasure crafts, because, you know, any ship out there needs to have a transponder associated with it, just like an airplane does. And with that, they can be tracked on Vessel Finder. And I'm just got it pulled up right now, looking at the Mediterranean, and you can see how many boats are in the Mediterranean right now, currently. And you can click on each ship and get a little bit of information surrounding it. It works for local ships too, in terms of ships on the west coast of Canada and the like. So vesselfinder.com, just a fun little tool to see just how many of these ships are blocked because the Suez Canal is blocked. And you can see exactly where the Ever Given is right now. And you can see that, yeah, you know, it's still stuck moving at zero knots presently. And it's just sitting there.
Well, thank God it wasn't an oil tanker.
Yeah. Gee. Yeah. And you can see all the other ships, too. It's got stats associated with them, including their current speed, their course, how deep the ship is in water, whether it's at anchor, when the ship was built, that kind of thing. The weight, the size of the boat, so many interesting little features associated with it. And, you know, the closest thing I can think of to this that it's similar to is the website flightradar24.com, which has been used as a pick of the week before and does the same thing for planes as well with this. And, you know, the Suez Canal is vital. I learned that the U.S. military, when they're deploying out into the Middle East, they actually run their ships through the Suez Canal, believe it or not.
Well, everybody does.
Yeah. As you know, and it's so narrow, you would think that they would want to go somewhere with a little bit more space on the side just so that, you know, nobody decides to treat the carriers as a target of opportunity. But no, even military aircrafts use the Suez.
But going around in this case, I mean, do you think there's somebody out on the deck just waving, go around, go around? What, Africa? Okay.
Right? And you could expand the map out and you could just see how many ships out there are presently active. And it even shows river ships. You can see all the ships on the Mississippi, too, in the U.S., believe it or not.
I can't believe there are that we still do that.
Oh, yeah. It's a big shipping lane.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it used to be. We kind of gave up. I mean, that was one of our first phases of transportation here was the rivers and canals. But, well, yeah, I guess the same in Canada too, probably, right?
Yeah, yeah. Except it's a little bit more difficult with us. But nonetheless, vesselfinder.com is my pick of the week.
Cool.
As we continue to track the plight of the Ever Given. All right, let's start with some achievements for this week.
All right, so first up, we have Luke PPP with 120 Herblore on March 24th. And then we have Snow Light with 99 Divination on the 24th. We have Kedgeworth with 99 Range on the 22nd. Lady Claw with 120 Defense on March 22nd. Zerdones with 99 range on the 22nd, and VI Nightshade with 120 constitution on March 21st. Look at all these 120s.
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. Yeah. Next up, we have Ichazi with 99 mining on the 20th, Kexi with 120 invention and 120 archaeology on the 20th, Lazy Colonel got 99 thieving on the 20th, Shut Up 685 got 99 smithing, Snow Light got 99 cooking, and Achazi again with 99 hunter on March 19th. Well done, everyone. And that concludes the programming for this evening. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that monthly bit. Just remind you guys to check out our Help Wanted forum at update.rsbmb.com/help. If you're interested in guest hosting, article writing, helping us with graphics and whatnot, just fill that out. Tell us what kind of player you are, how we can get in contact with you, and we'll be in contact. But what have you been up to on RS this week?
You know, it just so happens I have been fishing. I started fishing last week. I've been fishing this week. And I might go back to archaeology or something for a week or two so that I'm all ready for when Skill of the Month comes around. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Or I could fish now at your favorite fishing hole and start collecting.
The waterfall?
Yeah. Huh? Oh. Start collecting urchins.
What are the urchins even used for?
XP.
Oh, okay. That's why people like it. All right. Fair enough. Wonderful, wonderful. Anything else? Any further yak tracking?
No, my yak's tracked in the mud. He's stuck. He ain't lived too far. The cart's stuck and he's grazing over there on the side of the road.
I guess that's the whole idea behind skiffs, just to give a little encouragement.
I guess so.
So he doesn't become like the Ever Given.
Yeah, right.
All right. As for me, I got to task 40 so far.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah, that one is to get 25 Thaler or to do 1,800 of high-level potions, namely, of course, extremes and up, or magic longbows and magic shield bows and up.
Oh, that looks like that'd be the best choice, probably. They're all long, though.
Yeah.
One's real expensive. One's real long.
Yeah. And it's not even, you don't even get the credit for doing the two sides of the magic shield bow one. It's just stringing them. So you got to make the 1,800 of them. You can't even, you know, split it apart 900, 900. I might skip it, but we'll see. I mean, we have extra time, so why not? I might even go out and cut my own magic logs.
Okay. Well, there you go, Iron Shane.
Right? And then the option to that is to alchemize it all after. But this is the point at which I'll say that I think it'd be fun if fletching tasks could have ammunition as an option.
Well, yeah.
In some number, right? Obviously, 1,800 ammunition is different than 1,800 bows, but you get the idea.
Right. I mean, even if it was... Well, it would almost have to be like... I mean, it depends on the batch, right? If you're doing 10 bolts at a time, it's going to have to be 10 times that, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know.
But in any case, that's what I've been up to on RS. Still got time, so we'll see what happens with that. But that's it for this episode of RSB&B Update. We'll be back next week with Easter and the Pymas combat fixes. But also, just a reminder to everybody out there, if you are a Patreon supporter or you want to become one, we are doing our roundtable this weekend at 8 p.m. game time. You can join us in Discord, and we're just going to be discussing pretty much anything RuneScape related. It's just a fun little get-together that we do each and every month, so you can look forward to that this Saturday. So with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSB&B Update. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on any podcast listener out there. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. It's on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, YouTube, and so many more. update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And with that, we'll see you guys next week, everyone. Take care.
See ya.